doodle cool. Like, I feel like it's just, like, a cool girl doodle.
Yeah.
Like,
it's not an eyeball, so I don't know if it's a cool girl doodle.
I don't know. Just, like, a artsy, just, like, flare of the notes. I like it.
Oh, my God. I think I talked about this already last week, or maybe yesterday, but Audacity is so much easier to edit than Anchor.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be way similar, which, I mean, like, just the mechanics were similar, but, like, it cuts so much cleaner. I took out so much of our ums and our stuff.
Ugh, it's good that you've never used Audition, because then you would realize, like, how terrible Audacity really is, but Adobe Audition is, like, how I learned how to edit audio, and I feel like a couple of our episodes that are really well edited that I've noticed I did do on Audition, but it's, like, very expensive, and so we're gonna need more listens, so please, like, subscribe, share.
Oh, yeah, we actually really need to say that more.
Yeah.
Subscribe and share.
Follow us on Instagram. Let me pull it up, because I say it wrong every single time. Sorry, I'm, like, in the archive. I'm lost in... I'm balls deep in Instagram over here. Follow us at the Wild and Vile Case File Files, Wild and Vile Podcast, at Instagram.com.
Yes. And like we said, if you're listening on Spotify or iTunes or whatever you're listening on, if you just click the follow button or subscribe, that's kind of how we get recognition rather than just listening to the episode. So,
yeah.
But also just listen if that's what you want to do.
Please, but also make the 2-second decision to change our lives. Please. Thank you. All right, so we can jump right in because it's late.
We can jump right in.
I thought it was so much later than 8:30. I thought it was like 9 or 10.
It feels late, though.
Yeah, it's because it's been gloomy, but it's been gorgeous out today. This weather is my favorite kind of weather. Like, I'm wearing a sweater and shorts. You can't beat short.
Yeah, it's my favorite type of weather, but I'm just, like, getting eerie about the fact that winter is coming. Like,
it's coming fast, and I feel like because we've had, like, so much other, like, extreme weather this year, like, it's gonna be a very, very big winter. Hopefully snowed in.
Yeah, I'm not ready for winter. I used to not care about it, but now I care. Like, well, I used to have to shovel for my old apartment, and that was, like, fucking hell. I hated it so much, and so I didn't have to shovel last year in my old apartment, and now that I have the house, we're gonna have to shovel again. But we don't have sidewalk. Do you?
Yeah, but it's 10 feet, and then my driveway is, like, super small. It takes me, like, 10 minutes to snow.
You don't have, like, walking sidewalk that's, like, on the street.
Oh, not, like, for, the, you know, no, not for, like, people to walk on, no.
Oh,
but, like,
yeah,
a walk-up for the post guy, even though he just, like, cuts through
oh,
my yard
and
scares the crap
that
out of me. I definitely didn't for a large part of the year, but I think you're supposed to.
Yeah, well, we have a small driveway in the front and then a small walkway, so that shouldn't be bad. And then the back is, like, whatever. We don't have to shovel that if we don't want to.
Yeah, not bad. But enough about the weather. Let's get to murder. So, the story takes place on February, or starts on February 1st, 2012, in Anchorage, Alaska, at the Common Grounds Coffee Shack, which is, like, one of those, like, drive-up shacks, like, they're in the Pacific Northwest, which actually brings me to probably one of the best stories I have to ever tell. Have I told you my Pacific Northwest stripper coffee shop experience?
No, but we had a Common Grounds in Winona.
We did have a Common Grounds. It is a very common name, and
yeah,
definitely not the kind of place that I'm talking about. But so when I went out west, I went to Montana and then, like, went all the way to the coast because I had figured, like, I'd never been that far north before, like, having lived in California but never made it up to, like, the PNW.
Yeah.
So I was staying in Mount Rainier, like, camping, and I woke up at, like, 6 a.m. because I was going to pick up my little sister at the airport in Seattle. So I was, like, driving from, like, towards Tacoma, but between, like, Mount Rainier, Tacoma to Seattle. And it was, like, 6:30 in the morning. I had just woken up from, like, the floor of the woods and gotten in my car and just drove and, like, stopped at the first coffee shop. And it was Ladybug, like, bikini coffee shop. And I was, like, I don't know what a bikini, whatever, like, pulled in. Was, like, look, I was, like, what's a bikini coffee? Is that, like, a, like, Arabica? Like, I'm probably just reading it wrong. Like,
yeah.
Whatever. But so there's, like, a long line of, like, all these old dudes and the guys, like, out of the truck, like, leaning in the window. So any whoosins, I get to my turn and I, like, look up to the window to order and I see girl that is in a, like, Borat light, like
a unitard type thing,
floss,
yeah,
like, bikini, but, like, it cut out at all the wrong places, so you could just, like, see her nipples. You could see that she hadn't shaved in, like, 3 days, and, like,
oh, no,
she had, like, the biggest fake boobs I've ever seen, and, like, big lips, and looked like a Barbie with, like, super blonde hair. And she's like, hi, what can I get you? And I was just like, and I ordered, like, an iced Americano with cream, which was $12. And then she, like, put on a show while she was making and, like, took off her, like, big robe that she had been wearing that was, like, obviously completely open.
Yeah.
And, like, bent down. And, like, I was just super flustered. And I was like, don't look, don't look. And I was like, well, you look fucking weird if you don't look. Yeah. Like, and so then I looked and I was like, oh, God. And, like, locked eyes. And I was like, I'm so uncomfortable, but paid. Like, gave her my card and then went to go pick up my sister. And we're just, like, traumatized and, like, just very, like, whatever. So I pick up my sister and, like, we went to go get lunch. And then I realized that, like, I didn't have my debit card. And so even though we were in Seattle and, like, had this plan to, like, keep going up north, we had to then, like, double back to Mount Rainier because I realized the only place I'd spent money that day was at that coffee, like, hut.
Yeah.
So we went back and then had to go through the drive-thru again. And the line was even longer and the guys were even creepier. My sister had been giving me so much shit for not, like, being so dumb not to realize, like, what had happened.
I would have thought it was, like, a tiki thing. Like, a tiki-themed.
Yeah, like, you know, I didn't know you could, like, be naked and serve coffee.
Yeah.
But, so I, like, told her I forget my debit card and she laughed. She's like, oh, no, it happens all the time. Like, these are the ones that just got left today. Which one's yours? And she pulled, like, six cards out. And she's like, yeah, I assume people just, like, drive off, like, get nervous, whatever. And then I was like, yeah, I got extremely nervous. Yeah. One of the best, like, worst moment of my life to be over. But anyway, so that's the kind of place she works at, but not the stripper part, but, like, a drive-through coffee shack rather than, like, a whole thing, which are becoming a thing in this area now, too.
Yeah, okay, we can cut this, but pause. I have a story about a strip club because I've only ever been to one once.
Do you not want to tell it?
No, I want to tell it, but I don't know if I'm just going off on a tangent. But we went to a strip club in New Orleans when we went for spring break of our senior year of college. And Jamie Ford, or whatever, our friend Jamie ended up paying a cover for, like, 12 of us. Like, the guy, it was really early in the night, so the guy was like, whatever, yeah. And he paid, like, $50 or $30 for all of us. And we all go in, it's, like, dead in there. It's, like, literally just us and, like, one, like, the, you know, like, the newest stripper who's, like, got the worst shift or whatever. Sitting there, and this, like, server comes up and is like, oh, what do you guys want to drink? And I was like, oh, I don't want anything. And everybody at our table, because none of us wanted to be there except for, like, three of the guys. And so she's like, well, you have to order at least two drinks to be here. And I was like, she's like, if you want to watch the entertainment, you have to order drinks. And I was like, well, I'm gay and I don't really want to be here. So, and she just, like, dead ass stared at me and was like, okay, well, you have to. And I'm like, okay. Like, she did not find it at all entertaining that I said that.
Oh my God. That's super funny.
That's my story. And then we left because I was like, I'm not spending money here. Like, this isn't entertaining.
Yeah, it's like the comedy club rules. You have to drink or, like, you have, like, just pay a bunch of money to be there beside your ticket.
Yeah.
So, anyway, 18-year-old Samantha Koenig worked at the Common Grounds Coffee Shack in Anchorage, Alaska. And on February 1st, 2012, she was approached by a man in a ski mask who ordered an Americano. And as she was making the drink, he pulled a gun. And, like, as she was, like, handing it to him, he pulled a gun on her and said, turn out the lights, and then climbed into the shack as she was turning the lights off. And then tied her up, took her out, and then, like, forced her into his white Ford Focus.
She's the only one working?
Yeah, because it was, like, the closing later in the day.
2012? Oh, gosh.
Yeah, the stripper was the only one working her coffee shack. I think that's, like, the glory of them is you can have, like, one person or, like, one on each side if it's busy, but, like, this is later in the day.
Yeah.
So they drove around for hours with her just bound up in the back of his car, and then eventually he went to her and, like, asked where her phone was, and then she said she had left it back at work. So they went back to the coffee shop to go get her phone, and she sent a text to her boyfriend and who was going to be picking her up after work, and it said, hey, I'm spending a couple of days with friends, let me dad know. And then that was, like, all that she had sent, and he had, like, texted her back with no response.
Yeah.
So after they had gotten her phone and texted the boyfriend, they returned to his property, and he tied her up in his shed that he had placed, like, space heaters in and a bunch of plastic and all of this, like, creepy shit.
Wait, was this, like, dead of winter? Because I want to know how somebody can pull up to a drive-thru with a ski mask and it's just, like...
Yeah, and, like, Anchorage, Alaska. So, yeah, like, super wintery. And it's just believed
to be normal.
So, like, yeah, I think, a ski mask isn't the, like, craziest thing in the world to be wearing.
I guess, but you worked at McDonald's in Minnesota in the middle of winter. Do people show up with ski masks?
Not with, like, the...
face covering ones?
Yeah, not, like, the traditional, like, I'm trying to think, is it, like, a baklava or baklava? Like,
with, like, the whole...
Yeah. Which it didn't look like this really was. It, like, you could see some of his features, and because this is all, like, on camera, and there's, like, photos of the whole thing. It's really creepy.
Oh, okay.
He ties her up in the shed, and then turns the radio up over her screams. Asks her to give him her debit card, and then she says she left her wallet in her boyfriend's car, which is, like, back at her house. So I assume her and her boyfriend live together or something.
Yeah.
He then drives from his house to her to her, the house where Samantha's boyfriend's truck is, to go get her debit card. And then while he's breaking into the car, the boyfriend actually exits the house and, like, confronts him. And then he's like, hey, get out of here, and, like, runs inside to call the cops. And then Keys, like, grabs the card and disappears. And then returns back to his house, rapes the crying Samantha, and then strangles her to death.
Damn.
The very next morning, after putting her body, like, somewhere in the shed and turning off the space heater, so, like, it's dead of winter in Alaska, so it's obviously super cold and contained the body, he leaves for a pre-planned vacation to go on a cruise to Mexico. So he's flying to from Anchorage to Louisiana and then down to Mexico to go on his cruise. Or maybe he's leaving it from Louisiana. I don't know. Not important at all. Not an important
detail. Yeah, he probably just left from, like, a bay.
Yeah.
They do that. But, okay, pause. Do you know if this is premeditated, or is this, like, a... You know how, like, some of, like, back in the, like, hitchhiker days, so they would, like, just, like, they would pick up hitchhikers and then they would kill them without, like, really thinking that's how they're going to start their day? Or was this...
He seemed more so. So we're talking, I don't know if I've said it yet, but we're talking about Israel Keyes, who is one of the most, like, prolific. But although I've always wondered what prolific really means, because you can be, like, a prolific storyteller, but, like, is it a good thing to be a prolific serial killer? But, like, he just killed a shitload of people. Like, up to 11, they say.
Yeah, okay. In my mind, prolific is, like either unique or, like, famous for your, like, uniqueness.
Yeah. And, like, his uniqueness would be, like, he never had, like, premeditation, really. And, like, spoiler alert, which is, like, why we're all here anyway. But he had, like, different, like, kill kits around the country and would just kill, like, random people he ran into that didn't seem to have, like, much of a connection. And then he would do it where he was, like, traveling around the country and then fly back to Alaska after, like, disposing of the body. So, like, he would just go on, like, completely uncaught. And then, yeah, like, he was, like, known and, like, he got away for so long because he just chose his victims at random. Like, no, like, ifs, ands, or buts. Like, yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah. Okay. I'm looking at a definition and it says prolific is either as a plant, animal, or person producing much fruit or large foliage or offspring. So as a person, if you're prolific, you're producing a lot. So if you're a prolific storyteller, maybe you tell a lot of stories. If you're a murderer, you do a lot of murders. The other one is present in large numbers.
Okay, so present in large numbers does kind of... Okay, I get it.
It
just sounds so positive to put with such a horrible thing, or, like, to give credit to.
Yeah. Well, and also this is 2012, which I feel like serial killers are not... You don't hear about much after
2000. Yeah, it's very recent. Yeah. So... After coming back from Mexico on 2/17, so she was picked, like, abducted on February 1st. He leaves on the 2nd, comes back the 17th to the frozen body, continues to rape her, and then after removing the taking the body out, he applies makeup to the frozen face, and then sews her eyes open, and then takes a picture of her with that day's newspaper as a proof of life to send to her family, because he had concocted while he was away a scheme that he was going to say that she had been kidnapped and then asked for $30,000. So he writes a ransom note, asks for $30,000, and sends that picture with the day's newspaper and her eyes shut. And you can Google the picture, but it is super creepy.
Yeah, well, she looks totally alive. You showed me the picture. Wait, so did he kill her, or did she die by accident?
Like, he strangled her.
Okay.
Before he left on vacation. As he was packing on up. So, yeah, stitches her eyes open, asks for the money, and then texts her boyfriend using the phone and says, like, meet here, like, do what I say, blah, blah, blah. They make arrangements. A few days goes by. During the time before they meet to, like, get the money, because he gives them a few days to get the money together, he takes Samantha Koenig's body and dumps her in a frozen lake a couple of, like, miles out of town. And he, I don't know if it was a hole that was already there, but he puts it, or, like, puts a foot, like, digs a hole in the ice, like, for ice fishing, and then shoves the body had, like, cut off into it.
Okay.
And I don't believe the body was ever found. So, eventually, Samantha's dad did gather the money, because friends and family, like, around the community had all pitched in to, like, get the $30,000 to get Samantha back from this horrible person.
Yeah, which you're not supposed to do.
Yeah. And
as
then,
we learned in the last fucking
I know. Thing. But at least I didn't ask for $118,000.64.
Okay. I was
Patsy Ramsey reference.
I don't even know who that is. Well, this is why this podcast is so interesting to me, because I actually don't know about so much true crime.
So Patsy Ramsey, JonBenet Ramsey,
did
this case.
Yes. Sorry, I forgot about
how we did that case. Okay, that was
No, I do remember that, because that was like the Christmas bonus or whatever that he had received.
Yeah.
Okay.
through that time, like, I'm assuming between all of that, like, video that I was watching over there about this case, that they identified the white Ford Focus that Keyes had been driving, and then he was eventually pulled over. And in his car, they found a ski mask that matched the video footage that they had obviously found, the gun, stained bills from a previous robbery that he had done, and then Samantha's phone and her debit card and her keys, along with, like, a bunch of, obviously, bloody things that he had committed murder with.
Yeah.
So once he's arrested and goes to the police, he confirms that he did kill Samantha, but he's just one of her many victims. And he tells police that, "I'll tell you everything you want to know. I'll give you it blow by blow if you want. I have lots more stories to tell." But he told police everything they wanted to know, and, like, said that he would hold no details back on the sole condition that, like, didn't get out to the press, because he didn't want his young daughter to know, who had been in the house, like, once Samantha was in the shed for those, like, 2 weeks, and, like, he didn't want her to know that he was, like, a mass murderer. But obviously, sorry, there's your Keyes daughter. We know.
Yeah.
Although it's more so, like, he didn't want her to know what a monster he was.
Yeah. Oh, that would be interesting for us to follow up on at some point, of people's serial killers' children stuff. Mm-hmm. Or, like, what's his name? Ted Bundy? That kid that it wasn't his kid, but, like, had raised.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the BTK killer, I think his daughter, like, did a whole podcast about being the daughter of BTK and staying with the Black Dahlia, like, his family did it. But then that got really, really very much deep into incest, and then, like, about, like, the siblings sleeping with her, and they were, like, talk about it, and I was like, okay, I'm out.
When I did the Whitaker family murder, that was the one where the, like, son had plotted to kill his family, mm-hmm. and, like, ended up getting caught for it. But also, the Whitaker family is the, like, most incestual family in America, and they live in, like, the Virginia mountains or something like that. And, like, Googling the Whitakers I was getting mostly that. And, like, they, like, show photos of them, and they're just, like, backwoods hillbilly incest, like.
Oof.
Yeah.
That sounds like it's like my
sounds like my family.
No, it sounds like one of my favorite episodes / least favorite episodes of the X-Files, because it's just horrifying, but the episode Home. No. No. Let's get away from incest and get back to murder, so I feel
Sorry.
Less gross.
Yeah. I apologize for this
digression. So anyway, in 2011, he admits that he had killed Bill and Lorraine Currier by breaking into their Washington home, tying them up, and then driving them to an abandoned farmhouse where he shot and killed Bill and then raped and strangled Lorraine.
Damn.
So a very similar death to Samantha.
Yeah.
And then he eventually admitted that he had started, like, his, like, murders or, like, criminal back in, like, 1997 when he raped a girl out in Washington, because, like, he had a very interesting childhood, which we will get to next. But so over their investigations, he admitted that he had had different murder kits planted around Washington, Wyoming, Texas, Arizona, Alaska, and New York. And eventually the police were able to recover all the kill kits that he had in these states and, like, the places that he had buried them. So those would include, like, guns.
Wait, can I hear the states one more time?
Yes, because I wrote them, like, as abbreviations, and I'm proud that I was able to remember them.
Oh,
like, to
I
write
know.
Them down and say them out loud again. But Washington, Wyoming, Texas, Arizona, Alaska, and New York.
Okay.
So that's where he likely had killed them, like, set. He's like, oh, this is a good spot. So the kill kits were 5-gallon buckets sealed with guns, ammo, and cash. You know, if all one needs.
And he just left the cash there?
Yeah, but I'm assuming he, like, had plans to go back. But, like, because Samantha was his only murder that he ever committed, like, in his home state or, like, around his place that wasn't, like, in the rural areas or in a different state, that was the only reason he ever was caught. And, like, police admit, like, had he not been caught that, like, that time, or, like, slipped up, like, in that way, we never would have caught him, and he would have been able to keep going for years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, his first victim was in Washington in the late 90s. And then he said that before he left Washington to start his business in 2002 in Alaska, that he killed 4 people while he was in Washington. So he was born in 1978 to a large Mormon family. So if that...
Ooh, is he a practicing Mormon? Oh, my God.
No, this gets kind of interesting. But so he was born the second of 10 children, all homeschooled. And then they ended up leaving the Mormon church when Keyes was 5 years old, and they moved to Colville, Washington, and attended 2 different churches, one called the Ark and one called the Christian Israel Convent Church.
I love the name The Ark.
I know. It's kind of lures me in.
Yeah, I would love to name a church. I love the ones that are named, like, Our Lady of Weeping Sadness. Like,
I'm trying to think of good. The Church of Latter-day Saints. I don't know why that just like has such a good ring to it for that's just being Mormons. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I've always liked that one. But because Mormons, no offense to any Mormon listeners, but Mormon is an insane religion, coming from all religion being insane. But they're like, have you read about Mormonism at all?
Oh, I listened to a literal 9-hour podcast about Mormonism, and it is nuts.
It's I went to the musical Book of Mormon at the Guthrie and was laughing at all this stuff, and then I was just like, no, all of this is true, and then like kind of started reading about the Book of Mormon. I was like, oh my god, like the musical didn't even cover the crazy shit because it wouldn't have even made sense, like it's insane.
Yeah, and I mean, like, say what you want about any religion, because any religion is insane, but Mormons did some crazy shit, like, outside of medieval times. Like, obviously Christians did some crazy shit, and it's still are, but there was like that whole Mormon massacre where they literally killed like 190 people or something.
Ooh, we'll have to do that for an episode, because that sounds insane.
Yeah, no, they were next level insane.
How the heck do you spell massacre? I'm massacring the spelling of this word.
Oh, I think it's massacre, right? Like massacre?
Doesn't seem to be enough letters, but also it seems like too many letters.
Now I'm gonna have to.
It seems a little top heavy within spelling. Massacre. Do you think someone just screaming in
Ethiopian? That
was right. Yeah?
Yeah.
Good job.
An indiscriminate and brutal slaughter of people.
The best kind.
Yeah.
So eventually, after they left the Ark and the Christian Israel Covenant Church, which had been a practicing white supremacism, and which practiced white supremacist Christianity, and then during that time he met and befriended Chevy Cohey, which was a white supremacist that was eventually convicted of a triple homicide and murder. Which also led to two very public shootouts. So I want to take a quick detour to talk about this guy.
Yeah. But also, not all Satanists are bad, right?
No. No. And not all Mormons are bad. Not all Christians are good. No. Like, well, it's all...
I would say
it's all what you believe, man.
Yeah. Here I am, shit-talking Christianity and shit-talking Mormonism. I'm like, but Satanism... They're not that bad.
But honestly, I would say the Satanism is the least cringy of anything we've been to, like, all of his beliefs.
Yeah, probably.
At least later with the whole white supremacist Christianity thing. Not the best.
Yeah, okay. Pause. For those who think young.
So in 1996, Kehoe and Daniel Lewis Lee, not to be confused with actor Daniel Day-Lewis... traveled from Washington to Arkansas to the home of gun dealer Frederick Mueller, having robbed him 1 year earlier, and so they returned to know that he had even more money and a new supply of weapons and ammunition and cash on hand. So they entered while the family was out, and having cut their power lines, they took the opportunity to case the house and take everything they need, and then like corner the family once they entered. And then tied the family up, and then they took $58,000 in cash and guns. They shot the family, including their 8-year-old daughter, with stun guns, and then put plastic bags over their head and suffocated them all to death.
Jesus Christ. And wait, who is this that did this?
So this is the one of the friends Keys had when he was a teenager, Chevy Cahill.
Oh, it is Chevy.
This is
okay.
Chevy Cahill.
Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen Community, this is the guy.
I was going to make a Community reference earlier when we were talking about something else, but now I forgot it. But it was a good one. Damn it. What was it? Anyway. So the bodies were then placed in a plastic bag, and plastic bags that were filled with rocks and dumped in a nearby swamp. And then in 1997, after basically getting away with this, I guess, but him and his brother were in a shootout with Ohio State troopers. And later that day, he found himself in a second shootout after passing a car like that, or like in a high-speed chase, and they pulled over. And then in the second shootout, they killed a driver that was just driving by, like, on the highway.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was eventually, like, caught during the... Or, like, arrested after the second public shooting, and then sentenced to 3 life sentences for the triple murder. And I'm assuming he got a couple charges for the shootouts.
On a scale of 1 to 10, what is your fear level of being randomly shot in public.
Like a six.
Yeah, I am like...
I'm aware of it, like, when I go places and, like, I assess the situations that I'm in.
Yeah, I used to have, like, nightmares, like, especially after, like, the Batman shooting, you know what I'm talking about, in the movie theater or whatever, and the Las Vegas one. I would, like, literally have nightmares that I would be in, like, a public shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, something like that where you, like, get shot on the road for no reason. Because that's what it was, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Just wrong place, wrong time.
And we went to the State Fair two nights ago, and while we were there, a cop, like, put on his lights and everything, and I was like, oh my god, every time I'm in a public situation, there's a cop, mm-hmm. like, I immediately think public shooting, and then, like, 2 hours later, we were waiting in line for Kyle to get some, like, pineapple, like, shish kebab type thing, and while we're waiting, we hear just, like, boom, 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 and me and Steph and Nick just, like, wide-eyed look at each other and, like, immediately all have the same exit plan. And then, like, you hear the, like, the crackle and we're like, oh, it was fireworks. But, like, you just, it's socially irresponsible to have fireworks unannounced.
Yeah, I don't like it because I had, like, thought it was fireworks a couple weeks ago and it turned out to be a shooting just down the street. So, yeah, I definitely, it goes, yeah, the fear comes and goes, but it's always around.
Yeah.
That'll happen in 1997 with his friend Chevy, and then after that time in 1998, Keys joins the army and starts drinking heavily basically the entire time and was known for his love of the Insane Clown Posse. So homeboy was a juggaho.
I was informing Buddy of this beforehand, but if you guys didn't know, I would like totally do a podcast on countercultures because I love them, and big point of the Juggalo counterculture is they love to drink Faygo, and I think that's hilarious. They just, like, love this, like, dollar liter soda.
You can really just get a Quick Trip, but the pineapple Faygo is a top-notch beverage.
I've had the orange one, I think. Or I think they have, like, an orange pineapple, but yeah, it's hilarious that they just, like, that's, like, a thing in their community. Like, how does that even happen?
And I wonder how much more, like, I wonder if they're sponsored or, like, I'm sure there's some sort of deal between
connection,
the posse.
Yeah.
So, after the army of 2001, he kind of just hung around Washington, traveled a little bit, and as we know now, he was murdering people pretty much the entire time.
Yeah.
But then in 2007, he moves to Alaska and starts his own construction business, and that's where he lived and traveled around for until he was caught in 2012. So, Keyes was known for targeting victims who crossed his path rather than specific profiles. And so, he hunted at, like, parks, cemeteries, and campgrounds, kind of where people would be alone, walking, and just not, like, around a lot of different people. And he never really preferred any victim types, like I said, and he never killed in the same area twice. And then, like I said, he would always be preparing because he had kill kits wherever he, like, in different places where he knew he could find, like, victims later.
Yeah.
In 2012, after he admitted to police, like, everything he had done and kind of went on that thing, there's hours and hours of him being interviewed, which is, like, they laugh a lot and, like, are really, like, chummy with him. And, like, which is fine because I'm sure it's, like, an interviewing tactic, but he just, like, is laughing and, like, kind of, like, hamming it up a little bit.
It's like when you were, like, working customer service and somebody's telling you some, like, really fucked up shit and you're like, haha,
yeah.
You're like, yeah, your wife left you? Okay, cool, $9.99.
So in 2012, about like 9 months or so after being arrested for the murder of Samantha, he kills himself while in prison with a note that just kind of rambles on and it's like, who fucking cares what he said? He killed himself.
Do you know how he killed himself?
He slit his wrists and then like went up to the top of his bed and then put himself like in a noose with the bed sheet. So it went around his neck and then around his legs and then like slit the legs so that, like when the leg dropped, he would like lose the blood and then lose it faster, so like to ensure that like, he wasn't gonna survive.
Wow. I'm just curious because I mean it's like your one job as a prison guard is to make sure they don't die pretty much.
I know.
Or fight, which is connected to dying. Yeah.
He kinda reminds me of Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah. I wonder if I wanna look this up really quick, but like who is now who is. What is the murder rate in Alaska?
Ooh, good question. Good question. Good question.
I want to figure this out quick, yeah.
Do you know the most surprising thing I've ever Googled? How many dead bodies are in the Great Lakes? How many do you think there are?
Oh my god. Let me think. You're talking about like all there's five, right?
Well, let's start with like how many Lake Michigan. I think is the one that we Googled and then
the one that you Googled. Okay, well,
because that's when because we were driving across the Mackinac Bridge and was like, I wonder how many dead bodies are in Lake Michigan.
I would say 3,000.
30,000 to 40,000
Oh
estimated.
my God!
Right?
I started in my head at 10,000, and I was like, "Let's not get out of hand here." And I'm like, "Well, we discovered them in like what, like the like 1700s, maybe."
But
So.
yeah, through shipwrecks, like murders and get bodies being dumped, suicides, accidental drownings, whatever happens, they assume like 40,000 bodies up, or if not even more, in Lake Michigan and then like other lakes.
Oh my gosh.
Because Lake Superior doesn't give up her dead.
Like how many people?
Yeah, well, like, as in, like, it doesn't give the bodies back because it's so deep and big.
Oh yeah. Wow. Have people died at sea in the lakes? I wonder.
The wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Have you ever heard that Gordon Lightfoot song? But 21 men people died on the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald in like the 1920s, up in Duluth, right on Lake Superior. Big travesty. Great song.
Okay, so there's not that many murders in Alaska per year. It looks like 27 in 2008, 41 in 2014, 70 in 2019. So I don't know statistics, but I know people are dying all the fucking time in Milwaukee. And even here, I get notifications that there's like school shooting or like whatever.
Yeah. But yeah, it's your mind-blowing fact for the day. A lot more dead bodies in the Great Lakes than you think.
Yeah, and Israel Keyes, who I also had never heard of before.
Yeah, one of my coworkers had suggested it. I looked and I was like, yeah, I've never heard of this guy before.
I actually really like the name, though.